Natasha, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Sean.
Our absolute pleasure. Now, looking at some of the news this week, as we said, Director General of ASIO, Damian Lewis, said there was no evidence of links between refugees coming in from the Middle East and terrorism. Yet this is one of these things that just sort of refuses to die. What kind of case is actually backing up Mr. Lewis here?
Yeah, so if you look at the majority of the protection claims of people who arrived to Australia, either by boat, by plane, the majority of people are fleeing persecution either by the state or by non-state actors within their country of origin. So those non-state actors can include terrorist groups like ISIS and the Taliban, and often people are fleeing as a result of being persecuted by them. So they're the ones that are running away, not the terrorists themselves. An example of this is Hazaras. So Hazaras are an ethnic minority from Afghanistan, and they adhere to a different type of Islam. And as a result of that, they're targeted by both ISIS and the Taliban for their adherence. There are a number of other similar examples. For example, Iranians are often fleeing the Iranian government due to their non-adherence to Sharia or Islamic law. We have people who are, for example, running Bible groups or attending unlawful churches in Iran. And we also see a lot of women who are subject to honour killings and other kinds of gendered violence in various countries across the world. So I guess what I would say is that the majority of people who are coming to Australia by boat are actually coming for the freedom that Australia provides from this type of persecution. And it's quite absurd to say that people are trying to get in to commit terrorist acts.
Now, Mr. Lewis has also stated that the terrorists are the result of a more extremist interpretation of Sunni Islam that they have actually adopted as a form of their own. Looking at the character testing that refugees actually have to go through in order to enter Australia and in order to enter as refugees, just how rigorous is that screening in trying to comb out any kind of details that might lead to extremist links?
Yeah, so there's extensive interviewing that takes place. So when people arrive by boat, the first thing that happens is something called an entry interview, where they're asked extensively about their identity, their reasons for claiming protection, any criminal things that they may have been involved in. And then it continues on to a number of different interviews where people are asked to state their protection claims. And these protection claims and the information that people give about their background and their identity are compared down to the most minute detail. There's health tests, there's criminal checks, there's an extensive requirement to establish identity with documents and a number of other things. So it's really very unlikely with this kind of rigorous testing and interviewing and background checking, the involvement of ASIO and other areas of the department that specialise in this type of character testing, it's very, very unlikely that any unsavoury characters would get through.
Now, it's my understanding from this October, failed Iranian refugees who are actually living in the Australian community at the moment are going to be transferred onto a new short-term visa and then given about 18 months to leave the country before they're deemed to be unlawful, as they had not lodged applications for protection. Now, there's been a lot of talk around these applications at the moment. I think one of the pressing questions for a lot of people is that why is there so many refugees that have so far failed to lodge these applications?
So what's really important to realise about this arbitrary deadline of October is that the people that are affected by this process are people who have arrived since 13th of August 2012 and before the 19th of July 2013. So if you look at that time period, most people have been waiting around 3 years to be allowed to apply. Now, in 13th of August 2012, the government of the day made an announcement that people would not be allowed to apply for protection for a period of time that they didn't specify. So what that means is that it was only towards the end of 2016, early 2017, that everybody who arrived in that time period, around 2012, early 2013, was even allowed to apply for protection. Mm. So if you can imagine this process, which I've just described as in relation to the interviews, the completion of the forms, the submission of statement of claims, it's a legal process. It's very, very complex. Somebody like me, for example, I support a lot of people both in detention and in the community, and I am not actually lawfully allowed to assist somebody with this form because it's a legal process and it's considered to be migration advice. So what has happened is, after everybody received these invitations, they all went to community legal centres like ours at the ASRC or RACS in Sydney, who, by the way, do a fantastic job. And they all got onto these wait lists to get assistance. And because the funded legal assistance had been removed, the community legal centres were utterly overwhelmed and ended up with waiting lists of over 12 months. So the community legal centres started communicating with the department about the length of the waiting list and the fact that they weren't able to keep up with the demand to lodge these applications. And the department then allowed, or tacitly allowed, the community legal centres to just maintain these people on their wait list and lodge them as they could. We scaled up our service by 300% to try to deal with the deadline that came out earlier in this year, where people were told that they would have their income support cut off if they didn't apply. And these are people who were not allowed to work, so that's their only form of income because there was no work rights on their visas. And so we've simply been struggling and running as fast as we can to get these done. And now the government is trying to blame the very people who have been waiting patiently to apply for so many years. It's really quite absurd.
Yeah, it just sounds extraordinary. Natasha, just as a final point, obviously that is regarding a great deal of the people currently settled, not settled, I guess, but here in Australia. Looking at the offshore processing centres, what's going on with the latest for processing the refugees on Manus before that centre is actually closed?
So we're really concerned about what's happening on Manus. I'm speaking regularly to people who are detained there, and they're telling me that the facilities are being closed down. They're being told they have to leave. excuse me. But they have not been given any safe options. So they've been given no place to go from that facility when it closes down. The options that they've been given are to move into the Papua New Guinean community, return to their home country, or just temporarily wait in the PNG community for possible resettlement to the United States. Now, we're concerned about everybody in that situation because we've seen recently a number of attacks on refugees and asylum seekers in Papua New Guinea. But there's a number of men, there's a particular group that we're really, really concerned about, and that is that there's a number of homosexual gay men who remain in PNG and are being told to move into the community there. But homosexuality in Papua New Guinea is illegal. So they're actually in grave danger if they do move into the community there. So there were some questions put to the head of the department recently about that and what safe option he could provide for those men on Manus, and with the intention that we thought they should be brought to Australia because they needed to be safe. And he actually had the audacity to say that it's the act of homosexuality in Papua New Guinea that is illegal, and not the identity. And he said that is a question for Papua New Guinea, and those men will not be brought to Australia. So we're very concerned about everybody in Papua New Guinea in terms of the asylum seekers and refugees there, but particularly concerned about that group because, in fact, Australia is intending to leave them in a place where they will be persecuted.
Well, Natasha, just extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary developments, sort of putting them back into the same kind of persecution they were fleeing in the first place. We will have to leave it there, but really do appreciate you joining us, having a bit of a chat with us about this one this morning.
Thanks very much, Sean.